Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Next week, we moved our Sorrento show. We're going to be doing it on the 17th. The 24th, we will be at Greenmount Station. By the way, the 23rd is Election Day. Hope everybody gets registered. Make sure you're voting for democracy and all the good things that that keep us where we are with our flag and our state and our councilmen and our county executives and all the stuff we're going to be voting on here in the coming weeks. By the way, Maryland Lottery, I will have Maryland Treasure Scratch-Offs to give away at Sorrento of Arbutus next week, as well as at Greenmount Station up in Hempstead. Our friends at GBMC put us out on the road, as well as Farnan and Dermer. I'm glad that Zach gave me this. It's Oriole Orange, if you're watching out on the YouTube or listening on the radio, but this is a purple segment. I don't know the next time you and I are gonna like sit and do a football segment, right? You feel a little talked out on Lamar and the center thing, and that is what it is. We did the defensive thing and Matt Ibike, and we did an hour on how important that is. And I thought we were gonna do more on Derrick Henry in the center and Lamar and like all that, but it turns out Ryan Loop was the star, or Tyler Loop, I should say, Ryan Loop. Tyler Loop was the star of the show on Wednesday. And are you shocked that that it is gone as quiet as it has, that it was just a miskick in Pittsburgh for a play? Like, this kid's handled it as well as I think anybody can handle it. I tuned in, thanks to Chad Steele, I tuned in on the video late, and I saw him. I thought he reported himself pretty well. He seems like a good kid. He seems like that they still believe in him to send him back
Well,
out there.
we're going to find out about that part of it, the last part of what you mentioned and how he does. But I mean, go back to the night, that fateful night in Pittsburgh, where that was John Harbaugh walking off the field as a la for the last time as a Ravens head coach. Remember, he had his arm around Tyler Loop. To his credit, there was no running and hiding for Tyler Loop. He answered every question in the locker room that day. He talked at length. And
Not that that's a big deal, but Mark Andrews didn't the year before, just so we know, you know.
on Wednesday, he answered more than 10 minutes worth of questions, and all but maybe one or two were directly about the kick, the missed kick, moving on. He was asked about how he felt in the aftermath of John Harbaugh being dismissed, and did he feel in, which I thought was a really interesting question, right? I mean, you're trying to get over that, and then suddenly 24 hours or less than 48 hours later, your head coach is gone, and you wonder about that. There's so much involved when we talk about sports and when we talk about failure, right? Failure is a huge part of sports, whether we're talking about a team losing, whether we're talking about a sport like baseball, where there's way more failure than success when you're talking about being at the plate. But when you're talking about a situation, a scenario where someone is on an island and it comes down to them and they fail. I mean, Tyler Loop failed in that situation, right? I mean, we can talk about could the Ravens have run another play? Should they have done this? Should they have done that? He missed a 44-yard field goal. Period. End of discussion. And you were there. It's not as though the wind was gusting or anything like that. He failed. And be the first to tell you that. But for him to show the accountability he did after the game, for him, what, 5 months later, 6 months later, whatever it is, to answer more than 10 questions about it and to not burr up about it, to not bristle, to not have Ravens PR cut it off and say, hey, okay, you guys have asked enough about that. What about now? Like, let's ask other questions. There was none of that. Like, he answered every single question and he answered it with dignity and respect and an acknowledgement of, yeah, I missed the kick, but he said all the right things too. And I'll say this, and this goes back to even him being drafted last year. Putting aside scandal and off the field and all that stuff with Justin
Not
Tucker.
an easy thing to put aside,
No,
by the
of
way.
course. But just hearing him talk about his craft, hearing him talk about himself as a professional, he does remind you a lot of Justin Tucker in that way. He just does. And he said, look, you can't carry it. Like, you learn from it, you see what you did wrong, but then you've got to get ready for the next kick and you've got to move past it. And he's saying all the right things. Now, Wednesday, he made a 40-yard field goal at the end of practice that Jesse Minter and the coaching staff set up that they said, hey, if Loop makes this, You guys don't have post-practice meetings. You're done. Sayonara, we'll see you in 6 weeks, right? Other than the rookies. So he made the kick. You know, that obviously isn't remotely comparable to making a kick to win the division.
Does make you popular with your teammates for an hour.
But it does. But it's also, it's kind of all you have to go off of right now. And I asked Jesse Minter after Wednesday's practice, said, understanding it's a collaborative conversation with Eric and the front office and Randy Brown and everyone, what kind of consideration has been made to bringing in competition? Because if there's one thing I've been surprised about to this point, and again, it's June, they could sign someone tomorrow or bring someone in the second week of training camp because they're not necessarily loving what they're seeing from Loop, or they just want to beef things up and see if, you know, they can, you know, create some competition there and see how he responds to that. But I'm really surprised they haven't brought in competition. I mean, let's face it. We all compared this to what? Billy Cundiff 15 years ago. Wasn't the same exact kick, right? Wasn't the same exact situation, but it was a similar failure. It was a similar, you know, similar stakes in terms of, you know, whether you're moving on or not. Now, that was for the Super Bowl or tying the AFC Championship game and trying to go to a Super Bowl. But this was still pretty big as week 18 and trying to win a division goes. So I'm really surprised that they haven't brought in competition. Minter's comment was, look, we don't play again until September. He said, I think there are ongoing talks and conversations about any position, whether you have what you feel you need to be successful or whether you want to bring someone in. But he said, we feel really good about where Tyler's at. He'll continue to work over the summer. He'll continue to work in camp. But again, we play in September. So I think that gives us a lot of time to be able to answer questions as they may come up. So that left the door open, but it certainly didn't make it sound like, oh yeah, we're looking to bring in a kicker yesterday. So I'm surprised by that because I look at it through this lens. By no means do I say you bring in competition as though you're actively seeking out a replacement, right? I don't know, because you can bring in 12 other kickers who might miss a kick in a critical spot. That's why Matt Stover was so valuable once upon a time. That's why Justin Tucker as a football player was so valuable for such a long time, right? So that's not easy to replace all the time. So as much as you're disappointed and concerned that Tyler Loop failed in that spot, you also don't want to dismiss the fact that, look, everyone's going to miss a kick at some point or another. And you're even going to miss a kick that's going to cost you a game. That said, we also know the psychological part to that can be, I mean, that can be torment, quite frankly. I mean, ask Scott Norwood, right? Ask any number of professional athletes in a situation where they're perceived to have choked in the biggest moment. You don't always get over that. So that's where my urging competition is rooted, because you just don't know. And I would say this, because I've seen some people say this, and not too many, but I've seen some people say, oh, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to mess with the kid's confidence. Well, I'd say that's baloney to me. If he's going to fold because you bring in competition for him, then he's not that guy.
You get the wrong guy.
Right? But he's not that guy. So I reject that argument. But until they bring someone in, it does lend you to believe that they at least like what they are seeing in terms of the response, right? Whether you're talking about Randy Brown and the other specialists who sat down with him the day after the season ended and they reviewed it. Tyler Loop said he hasn't watched it since then, but he said he knew exactly what he did, you know, in terms of what he did mechanically that caused the ball to sail right, all that, right? He hasn't watched it since then. And I think that's a healthy thing, probably, you know, deal with it, watch it, and then move on, right? And he said, you know, the biggest thing for him was just to confront it. Yeah, I missed. Yeah, I didn't do my job in that spot, and it sucks. But I also can't, you know, he didn't say this, but, you know, the implication, you know, is you can't just lay in your bed for 3 months and just mourn it either. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you've got to move on. And I think probably the most challenging thing for anyone in that spot is how long you have to wait to truly have a moment that, I mean, even the kick in a game, let alone a game of that kind of leverage and those kind of implications, That's tough. That's to me, that's the challenging part because, yeah, if you're Jesse Minter and Randy Brown, you can conjure whatever drills you want to do in terms of running onto the field and make it seem like you're simulating a last second kick to end practice early, like they did on Wednesday. But none of that comes close to simulating what he experienced in Pittsburgh that night. And let's face it, not going to get that in a preseason game. Not even going to get that if they do bring in a kicker to compete. But to me, there's a little bit of a different urgency there when someone is brought in to hypothetically push for your job, right? But he has September 13th is going to be his first opportunity to make a meaningful kick. And even if he has a chance to that the Ravens and the Colts are tied with 3 seconds to go and he has a chance to make a 44-yard field goal, yeah, he's going to be thinking
In a
about that.
dome, in a dome.
But it's in a dome, and it's also week one that even if you miss that, your season's not over, right? So, like, it's tough. And that's where it's tough for the team as well, because they clearly have some conviction in this kid, right? They identified him pre-draft last year. Randy Brown went around the country looking at different kickers, trying out different guys, working out different guys, interviewing different guys. And he was the guy they identified, right? He was the guy that they said, regardless of how they handled the beginning of the Justin Tucker, that off season and all that, we don't need to rehash that part of it, but they clearly identified him from a football standpoint to say, this is our guy if we're going to move on from Justin. And they did. And I think for him, and we talked about this a lot long before what happened in Pittsburgh, I think the season just did not set up in a way to really test him a whole lot. Think about it. He only made one kick over 50 yards, but I think he only tried four kicks over 50 yards, right? It wasn't as though he had an opportunity to make 11 kicks from beyond 50 yards. He didn't have a spot to try to kick, make a game-winning field goal, right? Justin Tucker, his rookie year. Go back, I think, it, what was it, week three or week four, they played the Patriots on Sunday Night Football. It was the Torrey Smith losing his brother game, right? Justin Tucker, albeit it was a short kick, but he made a game-winning kick, which, if you remember, everyone was questioning whether he actually made it or not, right? It's kind of controversial. But the point is, right off the bat, there was an instance where a rookie kicker in the month of September had a chance to make a kick in a really big moment. And Tyler Loop, I'm trying to think over the course of his rookie season until week 18 in Pittsburgh, like, what was the biggest kick that he made all season? Probably the kick he made in Cleveland with like 5 minutes to go, and I think it tied the game, I want to say, off the top of my head, or maybe made it a 1 point or 1 point game, whatever. Point is, he didn't exactly have a season where it set up for him to be tested a whole lot. And I think that's where the rub is. If he had made two other game-winning kicks as a rookie, and what happened in week 18 still happened, you would say, all right, that stunk. We got to keep an eye on this, but he made the kick in week four to win it. He made a huge kick in week 11 to win the game. He just didn't have that kind of rookie season, and that's not his fault whatsoever. But I think it leaves you in this position. At least how I feel about him is, I don't doubt the fact that he has talent, but I still don't know what you really have with him. And really, the only truly meaningful data point you have on him, thinking about it in those terms of high leverage and a game-winning situation or something like that, he failed. So you don't want to overreact. At the same time, I certainly don't think you want to leave yourself unprepared. And then he misses a kick in game three, a week three with 3 seconds left. And then at that point you say, all right, well, okay, who's on the waiver wire right now? Like, who's out on the street? What kicker could we coax out of retirement? Like, whatever the scenario. So I have been a little surprised that we didn't see them bring in competition. Doesn't mean they won't come late July and early August, but everything they've said to this point, every manner in which they've proceeded, it's not as though they spent a seventh round pick on another kicker, right? They didn't do anything like that. They didn't sign an undrafted guy like they did Justin Tucker when Billy Cundiff returned for at least the 2012 preseason. I've been a little surprised by that, but going back to Wednesday, he handled himself well. And again, he answered every question. He didn't roll his eyes about anything. He didn't try to say, okay, I've addressed this, guys. He answered every question and he didn't complain. And to Ravens PR's credit, they didn't cut off any question after a while and say, hey, like, okay, guys, he's answered 12 questions about that, the kick, you know? He answered everything, and that deserves some credit. It doesn't mean everything's going to be fine moving forward, right, in terms of performance, but as him as a human being, I do admire that, because as you pointed out, there have been instances in the past where a Ravens player has been in that position and hasn't necessarily risen to the occasion in terms of talking to fans and answering questions and being accountable.
Well, being accountable, you
Yeah.
know, talking to the fans, just sort of like talking to the universe, in a
Sure.
general sense of professionalism of what the bar is when you're making millions of dollars doing this, and then hiding and thinking like some sort of dismissive avoidant, and like when Mark Andrews comes back, nobody's going to ask him about dropping the ball in Buffalo,
Right.
and you know, and then ask him where the hell have you been the last 8 months or whatever, and why are you making commercials about the military and what a stand-up guy you are when you're not. So I get to say those things because I don't have to beg Chad Steele for a press pass to ask these questions. But the mini camp part of this, and where you are in the scope of all of this, if this is the last conversation we have about the Ravens for the next 6 weeks, and nobody gets arrested, nothing weird happens, maybe there's a contract thing with Lamar and Descant, who knows, right?
Trade for a starting center, you know,
Yeah,
something like
something like that. Somebody put out on the
that. Yeah.
WNSD Tech Service, brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. Of course, you should get on that. If you're not, you'll know when Luke is. Of course, you're going to be eating Max Pizza on July 13th when this happens. But Luke will get the text out to you. So, how are you feeling about it? I mean, I'll say how I'm feeling about it, but I want to give your you have at it for me.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm evaluating where I think they're going to be. By the way, I was in Los Angeles the other day, and I got in my Uber in El Segundo. I text Joe Ortiz. He was in Vegas. Strange, but I was trying to get together with Joe because I was literally in front of the Chargers complex. Like literally, my hotel was right in front of there. Good Rubio's fish tacos as well. And I took my Uber up to see Rush at the Fabulous Forum. Not going to give you the car dealership, but on the way there, you pass this spaceship going up Manchester. It's the Intuit Arena. Have you seen this, Luke? It looks like the
Yeah.
Sphere in Vegas,
It's
but
crazy, yeah.
it's like hanging out in Inglewood. But you go by that, and then you pass this enormous spaceship that is SoFi Stadium on the way to this tiny little Coliseum that Rush opened their thing in and played 4 nights this week with Annika Nils. So I went past SoFi Stadium, and I remembered my day there with the Black Crows and all the weed in the upper deck, and the Rams winning, and the Bengals thinking they were going to winning, and Houdet, and all. And that was the Eminem halftime. That was fantastic. I'm not even an Eminem guy, but it was pretty good. So I went by there, and I thought, Super Bowl's here this year. NFL Network. And I thought, who's going to be here? And I literally thought this for the second or third time in a row, because I was in Vegas before, and I told John Martin this on our segment this week. I walked around Vegas, and because the Orioles were playing, one day they played at 10:30 in the morning, the next day they played at 4 in the afternoon because they're playing 7 o'clock games. It's like I'm wandering around casinos and wandering around Vegas. It was 110 degrees, and I went into sports books, which are empty because of these, right? Nobody goes to the sports book to bet so much anymore, but they're beautiful. You know, they have all the lines up, and they still, you'll appreciate this as the old fifth grade school teacher up at Susquehannock. They still have the little dittos where you can take the futures with you on the sheet of paper. So they had the futures for the Ravens, you know, and the futures. I think the Rams are 11 to 2, and the Ravens were 11 to 1 or 10 to 1, like, in most places to win the Super Bowl.
The Myles Garrett thing has made the Rams the head of the class now, right? I mean,
Right,
they were
right.
up there already, but yeah.
But like, so as it goes, and I didn't think about, dude, I spent a day and a half in LA and didn't think about the Rams. It was all Chargers where I was in Manhattan Beach. I saw Charger
Interesting.
stuff. I didn't see a
Interesting.
lot of Rams stuff. I
Because
just didn't.
you don't hear that. You hear the opposite of that,
I
right?
didn't.
Yeah.
But I was in El Segundo. It's like being in Owings Mills and not seeing the Ravens, right? I guess. But for me, I started thinking about the Super Bowl and whether the Ravens could be there or not. What do you think?
Could they? Sure. Because I mean, this last season illustrated what a season can be, right? I mean, going into the year, Mahomes, Allen, Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, how many times have we talked about those three quarterbacks and those three teams? To a lesser extent, Joe Burrow, but because his team has lacked, right? Or he's been hurt. And you saw how the year played out, right? Kansas City completely fell off the mountain, and then Mahomes gets hurt late in the season, adding insult to injury or injury to insult, whichever way you want to put it. The Ravens have the season they had where they get off to a 1-5 start. Lamar and a number of others get hurt. They rally in the middle portion of the season and then aren't good enough late and miss the playoffs entirely. And then even the Bills, who made the playoffs, but were flawed. And the year where you look at it and you're Josh Allen and you're Sean McDermott, and you say, okay, no Chiefs, which means no Mahomes, who has been the team that we haven't been able to get by.
By the way, he just got paid
And
again, right? Like,
yeah, he did.
well, we were talking about Lamar. I mean,
Sure,
like, if
but
Lamar wants to be here, I'm sure they're offering him a lot of money, but you know what I mean? Like, that's the Mahomes thing. He clearly wants to be there, and they like contract for life there. So that's what they're, that's, you're going to be dealing with him next 5 years, no matter what. So.
but the Bills were in this position where it's like, hey, like you're the most experienced team in this field, and they didn't even get to the AFC title game, right? And we're talking about the Broncos and the Patriots. No one was talking about the Broncos and the Patriots back in September, right? So to look at it through that lens and understanding the Ravens, whether we want to say they're the most talented team in the league or not, right? I mean, like you and I debated that,
Well, Harbaugh got fired over
but they're
it because the
talented.
owner and the
They're
general
talented,
manager,
right?
Vegas thinks they're talented. Vegas
Sure,
has them as
they're
a favorite.
talented.
Right, yeah.
Whether you think they're number one, number three, number six, whatever, like they're in that somewhere in that space where they're a talented team. So can they? Yes. However, they do have a first-time head coach. They do have a rookie play caller as offensive coordinator, who, by the way, I'm impressed by what I've seen from Declan Doyle. Does that equate to an offense having extraordinary success right off the bat? Well, who's the starting center going to be? Is
If it
Vegas?
does, he'll be the head coach of the Cardinals next
Sure. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So I do have some I take some pause. I have some reservations just about how much new they're navigating and what that means in terms of a rookie head coach, in terms of a first-time play caller at offensive coordinator, in terms of issues with your interior offensive line, even if you've shored up guard now, what about center, right? It was the opposite last year. So,
It's been done before, though. When I think
of
about
course it
Tomlin coming
has.
into
Of
Pittsburgh,
course it has. I'm
Harbaugh
not.
coming into here, took him a championship game. So, like, I
I mean,
first,
look at what
yeah.
Liam Coen did last year for the Jaguars, a team that perception-wise nowhere close to
Well,
where
you're
the
hoping to
Ravens are
catch
right now.
that sort of energy, right? And the Mike McDonald, we don't talk about him, but.
So to answer your question, can they get there? Yes, of course they can get there. Will they get there? I don't know. I will say this though, in terms of laying the groundwork, the work that they just completed when they started the off-season program, what was it, April 5th or whatever it was the first Monday in April. They were allowed to start 2 weeks early, the April 6th. Teams with first-year head coaches can start their off-season program 2 weeks early. The Ravens have not been in that position under this current CBA that kind of set that all up. So throughout April through May through June, I mean, really since the Max Crosby saga, considering how new everything is, it's been pretty quiet, actually. And I think that's a good thing, right? You didn't want to be in a position where three players suffered season-ending injuries over the last month, like has happened elsewhere. You don't want to be in a position where you have a couple players dealing with off-field arrests or things of that nature. You didn't want to be in a position where Lamar Jackson was not there, right? I mean, he wasn't there for one OTA. He didn't have 100% attendance, but by all accounts, Lamar Jackson was there regularly this spring. That's a good thing, regardless of the contract questions that will continue to linger because there are questions until they're not anymore. I mean, it's just the reality of it, but he's been there. So for me, despite the fact that there is all this fanfare about a new head coach and new coaching staff and you bring in someone like Trey Hendrickson, for example. He's not Max Crosby, but still very high profile signing. Now, it's been very quiet. otherwise. And that's a good thing to me. It's been very workmanlike. That's good. You don't want drama this time of year. My goodness, you and I just spent 45 minutes talking about Craig Albernaz and Samuel Bisaya, whatever is going
Self-inflicted,
on
by
with
the
them.
way. Self-inflicted
Sure,
drama.
sure, sure. But, you know, the idea of keeping things in-house or not, whether you have an issue or not, all that. You know, we don't know exactly
You want to
what's going
keep it
on.
in-house, don't take him out of the lineup, dude. You know?
Sure. Or just if you have an issue, keep it in-house, right? You don't talk about it to the media, whatever. But the point is bringing it back to where the Ravens are. And this is where I like the fact that they've had a quiet spring, considering how much new there actually
Well, they
is,
had
right?
Justin Tucker last year and a
Sure.
tired head coach, and you know, this offseason began with five, they, I don't know, dude. I've got JT the Brick telling you that it's been tumultuous, their offseason in regard to Max Crosby. I don't think that plays itself out into their building at all. It
And
does
I
on
don't
third
mean,
down if Trey Hendrickson doesn't get to the quarterback.
I mean that was tumultuous for the organization, but for the players, once they're actually showing up and in the building a month later, I don't think anyone's talking about that. I don't think there's a single player or coach that's out there on the backfields that has Max Crosby on their mind whatsoever. I mean, I just don't. I don't think that's. I think
I
that
do know Lamar texted out eyeballs that night he
he
thought
did.
Max Crosby was going to be on the team.
Well, and if you recall, we were at Costas earlier that day, and I was wondering at the time, hey, Lamar, just so you know, because I know you're not looking at everyone's Instagram and everything incessantly, Lamar texted this out. This feels kind of sort of like the SpongeBob thing that he did 3 years ago before the contract. So just, I don't know if it's that. I haven't heard that, but be on alert. And of course, it was Max Crosby later that night. Although I have since heard, and not recently, it was a few days after that, I actually heard Lamar apparently didn't even know about the Max Crosby thing. So it might have been something else in his life that was total. Again, this is why you don't read too much into social media, because someone might be tweeting or posting about the meal they just
I
had,
try
right?
not
I
to
mean,
vague book. You know what I
exactly. Yeah.
mean? You
Yeah,
know,
yeah. I
like.
mean, you just don't know. But anyway, point I'm making is since then, and as much as that looked the way it looked at that point in time, I don't think there's any fallout that leaks onto the field in terms of, other than what you said, other than production and how it looks in September and October and November and December, but in terms of preparation, in terms of team culture, in terms of how players feel about one another, in terms of how the players feel about the new coaching staff, it's in that way, it feels like it's been very smooth. And that's what you want, right? You don't want to be, we talked about this with the
Nobody's
Giants.
pining away for John Harbaugh out there. They're
No,
breathing in the fresh air. Yes, whatever it is.
and look, I will say this, some of the, and we're all guilty of this from time to time. Some of the observations out there this spring, well, oh, you know, this is happening or that's happening, or they, you know, because there's an implication that that wasn't happening before. Like, for example, I saw some people noted Wednesday, Mark Andrews committed a false start. They pulled him. And look, I like that because that shows the coaching staff is holding players accountable, but the Ravens have done that in the past, right? I can rec vividly remember just a couple years ago when an offensive lineman would commit a false start. They were pulled from 11 on 11 and they took a lap. You know what I mean? Like, so there is some of that that goes on that for me is a little fatiguing, where it's just like, okay, like I heard some people making big mention.
Let us coach the football team in peace
Well,
to some degree.
but it's, for me, it's also, they're not reinventing the wheel, right? Jesse Minter's not reinventing the game of football, right? That practices look a little different, but it's not something that I think is all that terribly noteworthy, I guess, is what I
Well,
mean
I
by
think
that.
it's even made less, and I would have been predictive about this. They got Harbaugh's guy. Both
Yeah,
this guy worked for
he worked
both
for
of
both.
them.
Exactly. He's going to
So,
have,
like, the system's not going to. They
it's not going to be
did not want
completely different.
disruption. Eric DaCosta did not want something new. You know,
Right.
he didn't want the guy from who was the old quarterback, Cliff Kingsbury.
I've said this all along.
I think of him sitting with his feet up in Phoenix, or you know, overlooking Camelback. I'm thinking he didn't want that guy. He wanted this.
I've said this all along. This has been more refresh than reboot. I mean, it's just, think about it in terms of software, right? You and I are talking on Zoom right now.
Well, they all think the players are good enough to win 13 games, and they won 8 last year. So they made a change in that department, right?
Sure.
Literally.
But think about it in terms of Zoom. Every so often you download a new update, right? And sometimes it looks pretty different actually, but you're not switching from Zoom to, I don't know, Microsoft
Teams.
Teams or something like that, right?
Terrible.
Right,
I hate
exactly.
Teams.
Right. But that's my point here. This is still Zoom, but it's the refreshed, updated version. And it's a little more dramatic than that, because I also want to be clear, and you and I didn't butt heads about this, but we had spirited debate about this when they hired Minter. Like, look, he isn't just a third Harbaugh. Like, he is his own man. He's not a literally not a Harbaugh.
Well, let's
He
find out. Time will tell.
so we'll see how he's different, right? But because I would also say this. I mean, it's like I said to you, like, you and I work together, but very few people would say that you and I are alike in very many ways at all, right? I mean, we both have roots in watching Baltimore sports and talking about Baltimore sports, and we're from this area.
All
And
your damn wrestling stuff shows up on my timeline because of you. I know that.
yeah,
So I spend too much
you and
time
I,
with you.
both love Pizza Jobs, but like, there are a lot of things that we're very different, and that's okay. Like, that's not a bad thing. And I said the
Look, if
same
you
thing
don't want
about.
to go to Boston with me next month, just tell me. All right? I won't take you. All right?
Let's see how the next few weeks of baseball go, at the very least, right? But the point is, with that, like, you're hoping when you make a hire like this, you're hoping that Jesse Minter is going to take best practices that did work. Because, look, how anyone feels about John Harbaugh today, and whether it was the right move or not, and it was time, in my opinion. I think most people feel that way, with how this has played out. I'm also not going to sit here and I'll continue to reject the idea that the Ravens won as much as they did over 18 years in spite of John Harbaugh. I'll continue to reject that notion. But you want to take best practices from him, best practices from Jim Harbaugh, and take some of those, mold it into your own. And then the things that you as a coach said, hey, if I were a head coach, if I'm going to be a head coach one day, I wouldn't do it like that. Everyone does that, right? We can all think some of our favorite teachers or favorite bosses we've had in our lives. Doesn't mean we agree with everything they're going to do or everything they do, but you're going to agree with a lot of things and say, hey, that works. That works. I love that they did that. I never thought about that. That's helped me a lot as a coach. I don't like how he handles that, or I don't like how we do that in practice. I would do it a different way. And that's what you're hoping for here, right? I mean, like, it's not necessarily. This goes back to, I remember, earlier in the offseason when they, right after the draft, when they signed Pavia and the other undrafted rookie quarterback, and they have five quarterbacks on the roster. I still say to this point, it doesn't make any sense because you don't have enough practice reps. And someone pushed back and said, you're thinking about it in terms of the John Harbaugh way. This is Jesse Minter now. I said, no, I'm not. Like, if you understand how NFL practices work, and understanding you only have X number of minutes that you can be out there for various portions of the spring and even training camp, you cannot get enough reps for that many quarterbacks that it's worth it. And that's why I fully expect once we get into training camp, they'll probably be down to four quarterbacks or maybe even three quarterbacks by then. Because especially considering you have one of the best quarterbacks in football as your starter, and you have an entrenched backup. So where are these other reps going to, other than, yeah, you do want to have another guy or two for preseason games, depending on how you want to do that. So, but my point with all that is, I never expected this to look 100% different, and I don't even know what that would be. Again, like, it's football. Like, you're not
We thought they were
reinventing
going to
the.
change the jerseys back in April. They didn't even do that.
Yeah, I mean, like, they changed them, but
Well,
it's subtle. But
and it's like the coaching staff. They made a change, and I feel like for now it feels subtle to me. I'll let you know when it feels less than that,
Well, and
as expected, as I predicted.
ultimately comes back to, are you going to be successful or not? Like, I asked Kyle Hamilton this because I thought it was interesting, and it was a very broad question, but I wanted to see how he would handle it. Not as a gotcha or anything like that, but just because I think so highly of Kyle Hamilton, and he's a really smart guy, and he gets it. But I asked him, how different is this defense? Not just talking in terms of Zach Orr last year and the year before, but go back to Mike McDonald in 22 and 23. Keep in mind, I mean, those three were part of this process that went back to kind of the end of the Dean Pease going into Wink Martindale era of Ravens defense, where they really rebuilt the system and revamped it, and they made it in a way that they thought was a little more flexible, more complex to the opposition, but simplified in how they teach it and communicate about it as with their players to make it easier to learn and easier to communicate and process and all that. So I just asked him, I said, how different is this with it being Jesse Minter's defense now compared to Zach Orr's defense, compared to Mike McDonald's defense, because it's all rooted in the same system that they all helped design and revamp
It
and
was a
build.
system Zach Orr played in.
Well, sure. But he
Yeah.
said, and I'll read you Hamilton's quote. And, I'm not saying this is earth shattering, but it speaks to what we were just talking about. He said, he said, quote, "I mean, in the best way possible, you bring in a new CEO. You don't want to change the whole structure of the company. Well, unless the company was doing really bad." So, and, he kind of, brought some laughter there. But you kind of tweak stuff here and there and say, if you've been good in the past, how do we get back to this? If you haven't, how do we achieve this? You put your own little flavor here and there, and you confront what needs to be confronted. Raise up the good, get rid of the bad. So you kind of sift through, like, all right, here's what you guys do really well. Here are the things the last couple of years that we need to junk, right? And then he continues, "I feel
Or improve,
sure, of
right?
course." Well, but sometimes you just say, hey, like a pitcher in baseball, if you have five pitches and that fifth pitch that you throw you get clobbered with it. Do you keep trying to improve it? Or if you have a repertoire that's good enough, get rid of it, right? Like you just get rid of it, right? If you're not good at it, don't do it. So he said, but he continues, "I feel like Jesse, along with everybody on the staff, has done a great job of that so far. We're not coming out here like a completely different team or defense. I feel like we have a lot of the same players, a lot of the same vets that we've had. It's just a matter of kind of resetting and getting to what we know." That very much aligns with what we were just talking about. Like this, it's not a 100% new system. Now, Jesse Minter has different things that he's going to prioritize and different philosophies that he'll have that will differ from Zach Orr, that differs from Mike McDonald. And keep in mind, coaches evolve. I
Well, one of
guarantee.
the reasons they hired these guys, especially with Doyle, would be that they felt like they matched him to Lamar, right?
Sure.
Like they picked the coaches around the personnel to some degree. Eric has that latitude in the organization because of his tenure to strategize this better with Steve Bisciotti and Jupiter when they axed Harbaugh, right? To
Yeah.
say, what do we need for Kyle Hamilton? What do we need for Lamar Jackson at this point? That and it's been built like that.
Sure.
Not we're going to create a system and make Hamilton and Lamar play in it,
Yeah.
right? Like that's other teams have to deal with that. When you're doing from scratch, you're from scratch. This isn't from scratch at all. This is from Hall of Fame quarterback and Hall of something, Kyle Hamilton, depends on where you put him. But like this team has established great players that have played great in this system. They didn't want to junk the system so much so that they hired Harbaugh Jr. here to come in. I don't expect major changes here. I mean, like
On the defense,
all of
now.
this makes sense to me. And I think offensively, you don't what they, I mean, Monken got a job out of
Well,
his tenure as OC here, you know?
but I do think the offense is going to be quite different. Now, again, when we say that, we're not reinventing the game of football, right? I mean, it's not like you're going to line up in formations that no one's ever seen before. Now, there might be a little bit of that here and there, and if so, then good on Declan Doyle. But I this is where it's interesting because. I'm glad you brought up Lamar and Declan Doyle because, this is a way to transition into this. Lamar brought it up on Wednesday that Declan Doyle cussed him out at one point during practice. Now, not in a, and Lamar was very good natured in how he said this. This wasn't something combative. Point is, the point that Lamar is trying to make is, despite all the talk about Declan Doyle being a first-time play caller, the fact that he's only a few months older than Lamar Jackson, this was an example of he's coaching them. And that's not to say that Todd Monken didn't. I mean, Todd Monken absolutely coached Lamar Jackson. But I think there were questions when you hire someone that young, how is it going to work? Is he going to have the full accountability and full attention of players as a coach? Or is this going to be you end up being a little bit more of a pushover, right? I
It's a
mean,
big
you can.
job for a 29-year-old.
It is. I mean, he's 30 now. So, he's older than Lamar. He's 30 and Lamar's still 29. So he's got that going for him. But
By
I
the
thought it
way,
was.
I went into Denny's late night the other night and I qualify for the late night meal. I'm over 55. So I
Oh,
just want
there
to
you
point,
go.
first time in my life I've ever had the discount. So I
There you
just
go.
want to throw that in.
The early.
I don't want to be disrespectful to 29 to 30, but
You
it
can go for the.
sounded better when he was 29 to me. 30 sounds, that sounds so, Sean Payton or so, who's the guy in LA, Sean McVay. It sounds so, you could be a 31-year-old head coach. 29, different,
You can go. You can go for the early bird special now. But no. I just Lamar saying what he did. And look, that dynamic is going to be there in May and June when, it's still new. There's still a novelty. It's still the honeymoon period. And that's I've talked about how quiet it's been this spring. We're still in the honeymoon phase, right? I mean,
The
like.
senior slam.
I love how you're just you're not even listening to what I'm saying now. You're just thinking about that.
Just
But
thinking about getting old and
yeah.
how he's 30 now. And I'm like, that's funny to me.
I know.
That's all.
No, but I just you want that to continue. That needs to continue. And you want that same dynamic to be in place come November, that Declan Doyle is coaching those guys hard when they need to be coached hard and holding them accountable when they need to be held accountable. And not just calling out Lamar, but anyone on the offense if they're not doing what they need to be doing in a certain instance. That is a challenging dynamic that you have to be like, that has to be a thing. So I think that's been
Lamar
good.
looked happy to me. That's my observation on it.
Sure.
My observation is, all right, John's gone. There's new air. Maybe I'll get my contract. Maybe I don't, but I got a quarter of $1 billion in the bank. This is my team. I have survived this. They brought a new OC in. I'm going to get my input in. However he felt about Monken, he probably could feel better about a coach than he felt about Monken. I think you would
At the
agree with
end,
that.
I mean, like, let's keep in mind, and Lamar's even acknowledged this. And Todd Monken, I believe, even said that Lamar texted him when he got the head coach job for the Browns. I'm pretty sure Lamar reached out to him and said, hey, congrats, I'm happy for you, all that. Lamar was very successful under Todd Monken the first 2 years. MVP 2023 should have been, in my opinion, and I voted for him as PFWA MVP, and he won PFWA MVP in 2024, right? I mean, that was a historic offense in 2024. So,
And that was a minute and a half ago.
right. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about one, albeit very frustrating
Declan
year, but
Doyle has
one
seen those
year.
plays too,
Sure.
right?
So,
Yeah.
yeah. So, but it is going to be different
But
because
you said it's going to be different. And I keep thinking to myself, different better be
but this
how
is.
they better use Lamar as a decoy. To me, how could they better use him without getting him hit in effing up defenses because of him? And I said the other day, and I made this clear, he's not going to be as fast as he used to be.
But he's
And
still really
like,
fast. But he's still really.
fair
But
enough.
I. Th but I think the biggest talking point as it pertains to that space is, you need your offensive line to be a lot better than it was last year, right? I mean, that was so much of the
Well, and
problem.
that's still not the case. If
And
that's where we were
oh, it
measuring
needs to be,
them,
but it needs to be
it's not good
better.
enough then.
Well, no, we don't know that yet, but it needs to be better. It does. Look, man, you don't need to have the best offensive line in football to win a Super Bowl, but you can't have the 25th. You can't have the
Well,
23rd
Declan Doyle
best.
would say, I can draw him up. You just got to hold your block for
Well,
2 seconds.
and that can be part of it. How
And
many
you can't
times
jump offside. You can't get us into bad down and distances. We can't have bad first downs. Like,
there
just
were
all of those things, right?
there and some of that might be, hey, maybe Lamar runs a little more quick game. Maybe they run a little more quick passing game at times, right? I mean, and that can be a way to offset some leaky pass protection, right? And they did that some under Monken, but there are other times where I thought they could do more of that, right?
But that's not what it was designed to do. Monken brought
No.
this thing in to have Lamar drop back and become that guy and win MVPs throwing the football, and did
Well,
2 out of the 3 years, you know?
they did have Derrick Henry too. I mean, in 24, not 23,
It
but
added up to 8 wins and the coach getting fired, which is why we're sitting here
well,
talking about it right now as a
2020,
reclamation.
not in 2024, 2025, that was the case. But the point I'm trying to make here is the Jesse Minter defense is still rooted in the same thing that was Zach Orr's defense and Mike McDonald's defense, right? They're branches from the same tree.
Or the one that mentor coached in with McDonald's six, 7 years ago,
Whereas now we're talking about an offensive coordinator that is not, this isn't a Todd Monken disciple, right? Whereas Jesse Minter wasn't a Mike McDonald disciple as much as was a Dean Pease slash Wink.
So
Martindale
all terminology
disciple.
Has changed. Been a lot of homework for Lamar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a completely different. And Lamar even said this. I thought it was interesting.
So it is a different language, as we would speak.
It's brand new the way Lamar, because Lamar even said when Monken came in, there were elements of the Greg Roman offense that they kept in place. Now it was much different overall, but this seems completely different, right? And this is where we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, because you have Declan Doyle, who worked for Ben Johnson last year in Chicago, albeit Ben Johnson was still calling the plays. And before that, keep in mind, Declan Doyle was a Sean Payton guy. So
Declan Doyle never had his own language.
No. So that's where, like, this system, like, it's going to be interesting. I assume it's going to be very heavy Sean Payton kind of stuff.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
And with some Ben Johnson flavors mixed in there. So I'm fascinated to see what it looks like, right? And that's where it's – I mean, we've already seen right off the bat, the Ravens didn't even try to keep Pat Ricard. Like, they're not – they will use a fullback at times, but you know who that fullback's going to be? It's going to be one of the tight ends, right?
Did John ever step out and hire? I mean, John's hiring would speak to John's personality in a lot of ways. I think over 20 years of him hiring old men to, you know, that weren't threatening to him, that weren't aspiring to be head coaches again, in some cases of Marty Morningwig or even Wink. More gritty guys than necessarily.
I mean, the Kubiak one was, and obviously, you know, regardless of how Kubiak arrived, you know, Gary Kubiak had been a head coach, right?
Yeah.
And became a head coach the next
year.
No,
I'm talking about taking on hotshot young guys
weren't
his own. I mean, McDonald's going to be a part of his tree. He's already won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, because,
you know,
I mean,
McDonald might win three more, but I don't know.
McDonald
but I'm just
left for a year, right? And came back.
But the notion that you would have a 29-year-old OC, in the case of Harbaugh, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, that Harbaugh was more defensive-minded, but really a special teams enthusiast, never called plays in an offense, never played in an offense, never played an offensive position, probably had a different kind of relationship with Lamar than Gary Kubiak could have with Joe Flacco, right, or whatever, playing the position, or even T. Martin, let's just say, right? So I'm fascinated by the notion that this is the first time that they've taken on a boy genius in a while. You know what I mean? Marvin Lewis was a boy genius for Marcia Broda. I'm just trying to think how many boy geniuses we ever had here. You know, Billick brought in Fossil and Neuheisel. And, you know, I'm just trying to think of Rex Ryan, who was younger then and went on to be a, you know, like went on to be a head coach. But the Declan Doyle thing very much feels Johnny Bravo to me, like Peyton Johnson, he'll be a head coach. That's the pathway for him. And there's nothing that can make you head coach quicker than an MVP quarterback.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, than a six tool quarterback.
I mean, to go back to what you said, I mean, what Marvin Lewis, I think, was 38 when the Ravens arrived in Baltimore, you know, when the Browns arrived in Baltimore and, you know, were filling out a coaching staff. You know, Mike McDonald, but again, he was a homegrown guy, but Mike McDonald was very young when they hand the reins to him as the defensive coordinator. I think what's interesting, and this kind of lends itself to, you already said this earlier in the segment, they hired someone that they know if this works, he's very likely to be gone in the next year or two. You know what I mean? Like, they did not, this was not, let's hire someone who's going to be Jesse Minter's offensive coordinator for the next decade. Because,
well, that's where John Harbaugh would get criticized for hiring Zach Orr in a, you know, I don't know about Monken. I mean, Monken's a head coach now, right? So, like, I don't know that that's
that's
McDonald. I mean, Harbaugh has.
I kind of think it's a lazy talking point. Not that you're making, but when people say that, because you don't know, right? I mean, to your point, I mean, Todd Monken, and I, granted, it's the Browns. Like, it's the Browns.
Well, did Marvin Lewis make Ray Lewis great, or did Ray Lewis and that group get Marvin hired, right? I mean, it's chicken or egg, right?
But I guess the point is, you can't be afraid of success.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
You can't be afraid of success. I mean, so you're going to hire an inferior guy just because you don't want to lose him because he's going to become a head coach. I mean, man, that's a defeatist attitude to have, right? That right off the bat, like you're cutting yourself off at the knees there. You're cutting off your ceiling there.
It doesn't feel Bishotti-esque.
Yeah. So
And
what?
Bishotti's in on all of these conversations. You
Well,
know, this is a part where he takes, this is his,
but I
he
think
lean in, this is my specialty, you know?
I think it to me it seems very evident the way this and Steve said this himself, how this played out. I mean, this is much more Eric's hire, right? I mean, and Sashi, Eric and Sashi Brown, way more. Steve, like
One in
Steve was,
31.
I mean, Steve was still going to sign off at the end of the day, right? I mean, like, you know, if Eric hired someone that Steve hated, he wasn't going to just let him
This was
hire him.
the
But
easiest sign off for Steve, though.
yeah, sure. I mean, the tough part is letting go of John, right? I mean, that was the difficult part for Steve. Steve didn't want to do that. You and I talked about that for years. I mean, but I think he recognized like we've got a quarterback who's going to be 30 next year and he's not signed long term. And not that it was all about Lamar, but there were enough issues. And Lamar's your he's the face of your franchise. He's a franchise two-time MVP quarterback. There was an idea of we've got to let someone else try this before we know. You know, if it comes down to it that Lamar's not going to be here for the next 8 years, we've got to at least try
I
someone
think
who.
it's different to like what Buffalo did to McDermott and Josh Allen in the middle of that. I never felt that closest with Lamar and Harbaugh in
That's
that they were
fine.
lockstep in that way. That I'm not shocked that life is okay for Lamar. And I said this 20 minutes ago. Lamar looks happy, looks adjusted to be here. If Lamar wanted out, it might have been like, yeah, I'm done with him. I'm done with Harbaugh.
Maybe.
But put me a Dolphins jersey on,
But you
because
know
I do
what?
think that that can be. Look, we spent an hour today talking about Bisaio and Albernaz, and I know Bisaio is gonna survive that because he's got
Yeah.
$78 million, and Albernaz has a team that's six games under 500.
Well,
So, but in the case of Lamar being happy, it's the only way they can win. You and I can talk to her blue in the face about anything else we
happy and
want.
healthy. Happy and healthy. I mean,
Yeah.
it's that simple.
Yeah.
And again, just to clarify,
I don't like the
I think
NBAification of that our
I've
quarterback has to, but that's the deal that they've set
but
up
Lamar,
out there. That's the way the
but
building works.
I would also reject any, and I'm not saying that you're implying this either. I would also reject the notion that like that this John Harbaugh's firing was not a power play by Lamar Jackson.
No, not at
This was
all. No, no, no.
an assessment of all the dynamics of the entire football team saying it feels like this feels stale. This feels like this is not
This feels
no
like it was in
one's.
Lamar's best interest as much
Yeah.
as everybody else's best interest. I
Exactly.
agree with that.
Exactly. And look, but part of the unknown, and this is where we're going to find out. As much as I talked about how this spring has felt quiet and harmonious and constructive and all that, we don't know. Anyone sitting here with 100% conviction that Jesse Minter is going to be a great NFL head coach, you're talking out of your, you know what? You don't know, right? We don't
Well,
know.
that's why September 13th is going to be fun. This is a little bit more of a delicious off season, and I
Yeah.
think that I'm interested to see if the fans are as waved onto it or waved off of it. And again, this has to do with the Orioles being competitive or not, and
Sure.
the Knicks game and the World Cup and Ocean City and what people are into. But the football thing's going to go away. We're ending this segment right now, and we
Yeah,
literally don't know
I mean,
the
we'll
next
talk a few.
time.
Yeah, we'll talk a few times here and there, but it's going to be kind of just
It's going to
reset.
be after somebody gets arrested or they sign a
Well,
center, right? Literally.
you hope it's not the former. The latter, we'll see. I mean, I would think.
It's the only thing that's going to put him in the news the next 6 weeks.
I would think. In terms of if you're going to add a center, right? In terms of if you're going to bring someone else, you know, via trade, whatever it is, I would think you'd like to have that in place sooner in camp than later, because there's a lot that goes into communication, the dynamic between the center and the quarterback, your center calling out your protection, identifying the mic, making sure you
You
know.
are convinced their center's not on the team right now,
I
right?
mean, I just have a tough man. I mean,
I
boy,
want to make sure we get that in before we get started on this.
that is a great, to me, telling me that Pinter or Gwynn or Corey Bullock, you know, those are the three, you know, those are the three candidates, Danny Pinter, Javon
Eric's
Gwynn.
doing his summer thing down in North Carolina here in the next week or two. What does he think he has his center?
I'm guessing not because
Okay.
because of how he spoke immediately after the draft. I mean, he was flat out saying,
We're not done.
we're not done. He acknowledged the possibility of a trade, but assuming they're going to do that, and I don't know with 100%, I mean, a deal's got to be there, right? Like, you've got to make, you can't force it. If there's a starting caliber center that is on the market, then great. But at the same time, if there's a starting caliber center, how many teams are willing to trade that, right? You know what I mean? Like, so, but I would think if you are making that kind of move, I'm guessing you want that in place by, I don't know, second week of August at the latest. Like, that's not something you want to do after final cuts, right? That sounds very suboptimal, especially on top of all the newness you have with the coaching staff in general. So that doesn't mean it has to be in place for day one of training camp, but I would think that's something you want to try to have in place as early in camp as you can, because you also have a rookie right guard playing next to that guy. So no matter how much we think of Ioane and how good he's going to be and all that, and
You'd
look,
like to have continuity. Just whatever it is, whatever we're going to have, let's have it. It's an offensive line.
Give
It's the
yourself.
most important part in sports to have continuity. You can
So,
change hockey lines. Baseball is an individual game. Basketball, you sub in on positions. You know your role. Football on an offensive line, it's a ballet. It's a completely different.
exactly.
It's
And
like being in a, it's like being in Rush and being the drummer, literally.
I'll say this again. I mean, I've said this to you before, not in this conversation, but in earlier in the offseason. I think Dwayne Ledford, their offensive line coach, beyond the coordinators and the head coach, is the most important man on staff, right? He's got to have that group playing at a high level. Now, again, going back to what we said a couple minutes ago, this doesn't mean I don't think the Ravens are going to have a top five offensive line in football, but it can't be bottom 10, right? It needs to be solid at the very least. Give me a higher floor than what you had last year with Falele and Voorhees as your guards, right? The guards are in better shape on paper. I mean, you've got Ioane, and you gave John Simpson a $30 million contract, right? 3 years, $10 million a year. So guards should be markedly better. Your center can't be an utter liability, right? And let's be clear, I don't think they're going to be trading for a Pro Bowl center. I don't think that's in the cards, but it's got to be someone that is solid, someone that Jesse Minter and Declan Doyle, when they go to sleep at night, when Declan Doyle's head is hitting the pillow, he's not thinking about his center completely screwing up the operation and getting your quarterback killed, right? I mean, you can't have that kind of scenario, because then, to go back to your question from at the beginning of our conversation, then I'd say no, I don't think the Ravens will be good enough to win a Super Bowl if that is that big of a problem. So they've got to figure that out, and I'd be lying to you. It'd be disingenuous of me to say that I think that that answer is on the roster right now. So we'll see. Again, no disrespect to those guys, but you're talking about undrafted guys. And in the case of Pinter, someone who has 10 starts under his belt over multiple seasons in the NFL. I mean, just not a, he's a backup. He's been a career backup. So you can't sell me on the idea that your O-line is better when, okay, you've upgraded the guards, but you go from a Pro Bowl center, three-time Pro Bowl center, to now having a complete unknown career backup lining up there week one. That doesn't work for me. And I think the Ravens privately understand that as well. So we'll see what Eric DaCosta can cook up here between now and, first couple weeks of training camp. Because once you get beyond that, then I really start to have my concerns about, even if you make a move, is it then too late in terms of wanting to have this thing gelling and cohesive by the time week one rolls around?
All right, Luke will be in Owings Mills when the time comes. But for now, it's Camden Yards and it's Machado Mania over the weekend. We got World Cup fever around here. I'll be watching the games as well, NBA and Stevie Nicks, as well as the New York Knicks, Stanley Cup Finals. Lots of things happening around here. But football, shh, nice and quiet is the way Chad Steele wants it out in Owings Mills for the next 6 or 7 weeks. He is Luke. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.